Thank you very much. So I will start by giving a plan of what I'm going to talk about. So as the title says, I'm going to discuss the ANEC applied in superconformal field theories. And the plan is very simple. I will just give a brief introduction about the motivations and what tools do we need to address this problem. And then I will explain the basics, both of superconformal field theories and of the ANEC, so that we can at least fix the notation and be on the same page. And then I will present the results and discuss possible future directions. OK, so let me start with the intro. So the average knowledge, we were going to focus on a particular class of CFTs, which are called local CFTs, which are essentially, by definition, the CFTs where there exists a spin 2 conservative current, which is called a stress tensor. And this operator has many important properties. One of them, of course, is the presence of world identities. And these are, well, everybody knows, of course, the integral of some correlator where T appears and some other insertions can be related to, it's proportional to n minus 1 point function of the insertions. And these are very strong constraints on the theory because they relate different correlators, and we will make use of them in this computation. But another thing that TMNU does, and I will be more precise about the precise definition, but essentially we can take an expectation value on some state of a certain component of T, the minus minus component, and integrate this expectation value on a null geodesic. And this expectation value needs to be positive. So I will briefly explain the motivations of this, then there are some proofs about it on CFTs. And essentially, this positivity condition is a bit like unitarity. When you have unitarity is when you have a state and you have to impose that this thing is positive. And this imposes bounds on the conformal dimensions of the on the conformal dimensions of the state that appear in the theory. In particular, if a state can be seen as some operator acting on a vacuum, let's say at point zero, then this bounds the conformal dimension of O. But the same thing can be said about the ANEC. So we can systematically analyze all these constraints, and sometimes they happen to be stronger than unitarity. So this, in principle, is a non-supersymmetric statement, but when we add supersymmetry, we have access to more complicated multiplets because we have short multiplets and supersymmetric multiplets. And yeah, in principle, there is more that we can say about that. So let me, since we're going to focus on four dimensions, let me say a few words about 4D so that we are on the same page. So the unitarity bounds we will always refer to them because the ANEC bounds will sometimes be stronger, sometimes be weaker. So it will be important to see when they can actually improve what is already known. And the unitarity bound depends on the unitarity bounds depend on the spin. And in four dimensions, the spin is a pair of labels which are taken to be integers. And according to the value of the spin, there are different inequalities. So delta has to be greater or equal than. If both j and j bar are zero, the unitarity bound is one. If so it has to be bigger than j half plus one. If j is greater than zero and j bar is zero, and otherwise, this is the bound, j plus j bar divided by 2 plus 2, if j, j bar is greater than 0. Okay, so we will keep this here, and in some notations, the people use take these labels to be half integers, I will take them to be integers. So this is accepted the number of indices. When I have an operator O, alpha 1, alpha j, alpha dot 1, alpha dot j bar. This is an operator of spin j, j bar. Okay, having said that, let me continue by also fixing the notation for the ANEC. Okay, so I will introduce Lycon coordinates. And I will make a particular choice for the states. We can choose any state, it would be convenient to choose an operator acting on the vacuum, and in particular, we need to smear this operator. So we can use any smearing function, but the most convenient thing to do is to actually take the Fourier transform. And since we are in a conformal field theory, it doesn't really matter which momentum we take. So we just take momentum along the zero component with magnitude 1. So this is just a choice, but we can always do this. So this is our choice of states. The choice of using the Fourier transform is not particularly insightful. That makes iteration and other expressions much easier to handle. Okay, so what we want to compute is the following integral. Integral from minus infinity to infinity of, this state, let me say, O bar will be the bra of this state at point x1. Let me say this is integral dx2 minus. Okay. And also integral in d4x13. This is for the Fourier transform. This is an integral on R4. Okay. O bar x1. And let me say, let me call A an index that collectively indicates all the various Lorentz indices. So this is the bra state. I have the component t minus minus at point x2. And then OB at point x3. And that's it. OK, so in a CFT, any three-point function with possibly spinning operators can be uniquely fixed up to some numbers, which are OP coefficients, and can be written as a sum of tensor structures. So it's a finite sum, A, that goes from 1 to, say, n, of some tensor structures, lambda A, or 1, or 2, or 3. And then the tensor structures are just, I don't know, come up with a name for them. Let's say T, A, or 1, or 2, or 3. So we can do the same for this guy. And in the end, we end up with some sort of sum, lambda A, O bar T O, and something that we'll call the energy, E A. And then there are also these two indices, A, B. So this is a matrix. It depends on two indices, A, B. And the statement is that I've been a bit sloppy when I define this index. The proper way to do it is that I will have a state index A, and then I will try this A with some polarization, let's say U. So since this thing has to be positive for every state, it has to be positive for every choice of U. So the result is that this whole matrix has to be semi-definite positive. And so this problem here can be addressed by using some piece of mathematics called semi-definite programming in some cases. Okay, so these lambda O/TO are related to each other by worded entities and many other, well, essentially worded entities. And so it becomes simpler. So there are not so many lambdas that are actually appearing in this sum. If there are not many, sometimes we can address this problem just by simply solving the inequalities. If there are many, there are some numerical, some softwares that can analyze this thing numerically. So we also make use of that. I can put this back. Okay, so what I want to say now is a few words about, oh yeah, sorry. I should say also a few words about the ANEC, about is the status of this thing in CFTs. So it was proven.
Sorry, can I ask a naive question? So,
yep.
So in N plus 4, for example, you could relate a stress tensor to some BPS operators, right?
Right, yeah.
Then does this translate into some statements about some positivity of some matrix, some three-point function, or even operators without spin that one could check using integrability, for example?
Oh, you mean if I take O and O bar to be trivial, to be scalars?
I'm asking, what are the simplest, are there things to be checked or to be involved that I could play with in N equals 4? What are the simplest matrix that has to be positive that I could try checking?
I guess the simplest.
I could get rid of lots of spin, but I don't want,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
I
yeah,
want
I got,
to get rid still something non-trivial. What would be the simplest non-trivial thing that I could check?
I guess, like you said, since T is a scalar, and I could take two scalars here, and this stupid function can be very easy to analyze. But the way we do it is essentially we use supersymmetry in a very peasant way. We just expand in components, and we carefully consider all the relations between the various OP coefficients, and then we impose the ANEC on all of them. You will see later. So in N equals 4, it might be very difficult to do this. We don't have a fully supersymmetric way of analyzing the problem. This is still done in like normal space. Maybe if there is a way to actually impose this directly in superspace, that would be nice. In N equals 4, I don't know how to. I mean, okay, of course, in N equals 4, I can just take the components of each multiplet, and I impose the ANEC on all of them. But I don't know if that's going to be. We still have to. I mean, if we go in components, we still have to analyze spinning operators.
Since you're over there, can you expand on that Fourier transform? I mean, it's implicit in the next line, but what are you? Why? Yeah.
You mean this?
Yeah.
Oh, well, the reason is that we want to define a state by smearing an operator on the vacuum. And so the simplest choice of smearing function is just an exponential. We can also choose other functions, but this makes the integral particularly easy to evaluate. And, the choice of the momentum is trivial. If I add here a momentum q, this is going to appear overall everywhere, so there is no point in having. Yeah.
Okay.
So there are essentially two proofs of the ANEC. One is this is in 2016. And this uses some arguments about information theory. And then there is another proof by Hartman and Al. The year after, which uses causality. I should mention that there were previous partial proofs of the ANEC by using causality that only apply to holographic theories. And OK, so this is what I wanted to say. And then I can, yeah, then I can go to supersymmetry. So I will consider n equals 1 supersymmetry.
Before you go on,
yeah.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
Maybe this is a question for the end of the talk, but here they're using, say, causality. Do you think there's a way to generate the bounds that you're going to give us later just by working directly with something with causality and your three-point functions? Or do you think you really have to package it as the anek? And then, like, I'm wondering,
you mean like,
if you go back one step and
I see. You mean like going imposing causality directly in the bulk or something like that?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what I would do, but somehow I'd use sort of something more basic than the anek.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what, because even in the causality argument, they still have to take the OPE between two operators in a certain regime, and then they find that the anek operator shows up. So I don't think that there is anything more fundamental. Probably we still have to apply the anek. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, let me say a few words about super conformal multiplets. In a CFT, the conformal multiplets are built in the following way. There are the generators of translations and special conformal transformations. And we define chiral primary, sorry, not chiral. We define a conformal primary such that k mu acting on O is 0. In supersymmetry, in the same way as the supercharges are sort of a square root of P, then there is another pair of supercharges that are a square root of K. And so there is a stronger condition on the operator, which is the condition that it should be super conformal primary. And that amounts to having S and S bar annihilating the operator. And then I can apply, okay, let me write it here. And then I can apply Q and Q bar on the operator and build sort of a tree. So this is very simple. If you have n equals 1, I can apply Q or Q bar. And these are still primaries, but not super conformal primary. And then, okay, since I have only n equals 1, I can only apply it up to twice. So I have all these states. And I can keep going. So for these guys, I have two different choices of, actually, four different choices of spin, because I can add 1/2 spin or I can remove 1/2 spin. So I have both these choices, which I denote by just a superscript, plus or minus. Here I have 4 of them. And for these guys, I don't have any choice because I just contract the indices between each other. What I wanted to say, okay, so another thing I want to say is a bit of notation. Usually, the usual quantum numbers that people consider are the conformal dimension delta and the R charge R. Every super conformal theory has an R symmetry group, which in the case of n equals 1 is U1. I will relate them by means of these two charges, Q and Q bar. So we use the results in the Q and Q bar notation for the rest of the talk. So I keep it here in case you forget. Essentially, what we do is we impose the anek on all these operators. And we didn't consider all the other ones, mostly because of technical difficulties. But it's not likely that it will be important for the anek, because as we will see, the bounds become stronger when the spin becomes larger. And the results that we're going to get are basically lower bounds on the conformal dimension. So if I increase in this direction, I increase the conformal dimension but not the spin. So it is unlikely that these operators will give me improvements on the bounds that I obtained before. And of course, it is very easy to just apply the ANEC on all of them because we know how it works on non-supersymmetric space. But it's not going to be enough because these are not generic operators. These are all related to each other. And because the OP coefficients that they have are related. And one systematic way of doing this is to consider the operator in superspace. So as you all know, I can introduce two Grassmann variables, theta and theta bar, and just expand my multiplet in the following way. And then I can write a fully supersymmetric three-point function of O, which depends on theta, theta bar, and I can expand it. And that will relate all these guys together, and I will also be able to essentially relate lambda, let's say, QO, P, Q, QO. I will be able to relate it with lambda O bar TO. So having the isolation is going to impose further constraints, and it can improve the bounds. Another thing, last thing that I want to say about supersymmetry, I can write it here. It's a bit maybe boring, but it's going to be important for the results. Otherwise, the results will not make sense. Because we essentially adopt a classification made previously by Cordova, Dumitrescu, and Intelligator of the superconformal multiplet. So since that's a very clean notation, we're going to use that. And we need to talk about short and long multiplets. So shortening conditions can be seen as a pair of letters, x, x bar, where x can be L, A, and B. I will explain what they mean. So if I have an L, that means long. So a long simply implies that Q acts unconstrained on O. So that simply means that I can build the whole tree without any relation, without any constraints. A is essentially a long multiplet at threshold. Some states become null. And in particular, it means that the Q bar O is null. So Q does not give this particular state. And also all the other states that contain a minus essentially are null. And then there's yet another shortening condition, which is the B. It simply says that Q annihilates O. And these have also unitarity bounds associated to them. So this means that this tells you that Q has to be greater or equal than, let's say, greater J of plus 1. This, as I was saying, saturates the long bound. And this is Q equals 0. And also, the spin must be 0. And then I can also similarly define L, A, and B. I'm not going to write it, but essentially, whatever on this part by putting bars on everything. So it's like Q is bigger than J plus 1, and so on. OK, so now we are ready to see the results. I'm going to maybe erase this part. Okay. So let me start by not using any supersymmetry, so n equals 0. So just same about CFTs. We considered these kind of representations, the representation j, 0, and j, 1. So a general thing about the ANIC is that it is effective when the difference between these two labels is big. So you're not going to find anything interesting for jj, so for jj, so symmetric traceless, in the sense that the ANIC is not going to tell you anything more than unitary. So we consider these two cases because we're the first, the simplest ones that we could address. And we obtain some numerical bound by doing a fit with rational coefficients. This is what we obtain. The lower bound has to be the following. This number will not make too much sense, but this is what comes out from the numerics. I should say that even though these are numerical results, doesn't make a lot of sense to write rational coefficients, but the fit is very, very close to being irrational. So this works both for j bar equals 0 and 1. And if you want to see, well, essentially, the plot is very simple. So this is j. This is delta. So when you start from 0, it has a slope of 45 degrees. And then around more or less j equals 20, it starts deviating, and it becomes a bit less than that. Okay, so clearly this is not a very insightful answer. Maybe by considering more general three-point functions, we can obtain some number that makes more sense, hopefully, and maybe do a conjecture of what should be the general behavior. But we didn't want to have any conjecture for what could be the general formula for a different J bar, so we're going to leave it at that. And now for supersymmetry.
To make sure I'm understanding that unitarity bound goes under.
The unitarity bound is it has a slope of j half. No?
Yeah.
So it's much lower than that.
Oh, okay. Okay,
so supersymmetry. I mean, this plot is not very. Okay. So here we consider only j, 0. They do have inside the j, 1 representation, so this is essentially as much as we can do if you only have these results. Okay, so let's go for some protected multiplets first. If I have A, B bar, so an A, B bar would be, well, from this table would be basically this shortening condition on one side and this one on the other side. So these four J, greater or equal than 2. These are absent from any local CFT. Okay, so this is not a statement about from the ANIC, actually. This is implied by word identities. So let me make a small comment about that. In the paper by Cordova and Diab, where they analyze these constraints in non-supersymmetric theories, they indeed found the following so-called CFT analog of the Weinberg-Witten theorem, the CFT version of this. with that there is no free, there is no free conformal multiplier. With spin j, 0 when j is greater or equal than 3. So essentially, this means that the free fields are only the scalar, the free fermion, and then the field strength. And there is no field with 3 indices, which is free. And our supersymmetric version is essentially an immediate consequence of this, because if you take j equals to 2 AB bar multiplet, there is a j equals to 3 free field inside. Okay, so this was simple. The other interesting thing would be the LB bar, the first interesting thing. These are so-called LB bar for j greater than 1. These are the so-called chiral primaries. And what we find is the following bound. Delta is greater or equal than 3fj. And this is saturated by, if you want, a combination of j free fields. The dimension is 3fj. And okay, this is stronger than unitarity when j is bigger than 1. The other thing that we find is the AA bar. Okay, so the ANEC. So for j greater or equal than 4, these are also absent. And this is implied by the ANEC this time. And then the other shortening conditions, I will review them on a plot, which is simpler to see them all together. For the other ones, they are allowed, but they satisfy some bounds which are different than unitarity. So let me make a small plot. So the plot will be in the q, q bar variables, which are defined up there. So on the bottom, we have the q bar. On the top, we have the q. And the unitarity bounds are written up there. So since we're going to have j bar equals 0, here we have q bar equals 1 as the bound for the a bar. This line cannot be surpassed. And then we also have all these lines for different values of j. So this is j equals 1. This is j equals 0, j equals 2, and so on. So I'm going to write a few of them. And the last one. OK, so for j equals 1, 2, and 3, the ANEC doesn't impose anything further than unitarity. So all these things are allowed. You should imagine this as being 5 different plots, all superimposed. When j is equal to 4, we already see something happening around here. So we see that this part is not allowed. There is like a point where it deviates from the unitarity, and it goes up. So now, first of all, we see why the AA bar is not allowed. Because when you are on this side, when you approach this line, we are imposing the A. And we approach this line, we're imposing the A bar. So these intersections here are the AA bar points. right? So since there is nothing here, the ANIC forbids this, this AA bar is forbidden. And the bound becomes a bit higher. And also here. And then I can continue, look at, this, at the next value of the spin, and again I see that there is another point where it starts to deviate, and then it goes up, and so on. Here we start to deviate a bit earlier and then go up. So all these values here, all these intersections, are forbidden. And also these guys, they all line up in a line. So I can give you some best fits for those lines. If I have the L A bar and the ANEC tells you that Q has to be more or less bigger than 1.43 J minus 1.79. When we get A L bar, the bound, so in this case, we have to do numerics because there are two undetermined coefficients after the word identity. If we have the other one, LA bar, AL bar, there's only one indeterminate coefficient, so we can use Mathematica instead of having to use some other more complicated software for analyzing this kind of semi-definite positiveness. And we do still have to use numerics, but it's much more under control, and we can get arbitrarily close to this bound. And then, yeah, and then essentially the LL bar would be the entire region above these lines. Okay. So let me now say a few words about n equals to 2. So for n equals to 2, we don't have a fully n equals to 2 supersymmetric analysis of these bounds. But we did essentially what I was talking about earlier. So if we can decompose an n equals to 2 multiplet into n equals 1 multiplet, we can just ignore the fact that these are all related to each other and impose the ANIC on all of them and then take the intersection of these bounds. And this was actually the main motivation to start this program. Well, one of the main motivations. And the idea was the existence of these operators called exotic primaries in a paper by Buchan et al. So these are operators which in the same parlance as this kind of classification, these are also LB bar, but n equals to 2. And they have, so they have, let me check. The R's, the SO2R, this is the SO2, should be 0. And then the U1R is related to, the U1R is related to the conformal dimension. So delta is equal to U1R divided by 2. And the spin, so the exotic ones are those where the spin is j, 0 for j bigger than 0. When j is 0, these are not exotic at all. These are just the Coulomb branch operators. If, as an aside, LB bar are the very well-known trace of phi to the k operators. But it becomes more interesting if you consider the ones with non-zero spin, because they cannot be constructed in any Lagrangian theory. And furthermore, in this paper, they prove that in a very large class of theories, they also cannot be constructed. And we asked ourselves the question, maybe there is a way to exclude them from first principle. And one of them could be that maybe they do not satisfy the ANEC. So we didn't quite succeed to exclude them completely. But I can tell you what is the bound that we can get. Essentially, we can consider, as I was saying before, the Q1, Q bar 1, n equals 1 subalgebra of n equals 2. And apply the same story on just this particular subalgebra. And the result is that delta of the exotic should be greater or equal than. So this result follows from the fact that if you apply a Q2, so the other n equals 1 subalgebra, on a super primary O exotic, you get an n equals 1 LB bar again, which has bigger spin and also bigger dimension. And if you work out the numbers, this is the result. So they're not quite excluded, but it is not yet obvious to me that this is the as much as we can get. Maybe if we do, maybe fully n equals to 2 analysis can exclude them. So this is essentially what I would like to think about for the future. OK, in passing, we also analyzed the same constraints for add-on multiplets, but the results are not very insightful. For one thing, we can also impose the same constraints on exotic primaries with non-zero R. And the result is basically the same, even if I have O exotic, where R is different from 0. It is still true that delta exotic has to be greater or equal to 3 of j plus 1. But this time, the delta is the S2 R plus R over 2. So the bound on the differential is the same, but the bound on the U1R charge is different. Okay. So I would like to discuss maybe some ideas that I have to maybe pursue this for n equals to 2. So there are any questions on the results so far? OK. OK, so so the way we essentially worked out the relations between the OP coefficients, the one I was telling you before, something like that. Was very, very, very brute force, I would say. Essentially, we consider a correlator in superspace, O of x1, theta 1, theta bar 1. And n equals 1, the stress tensor is actually a spin 1 current, the Ferrara-Zumino multiplet. So it's j, x2, theta 2, theta bar 2. And then, so this is O bar. And then the other one. So this can be written in superspace as some prefactor, which I call k, that depends on the first two operator. Of course, I can always choose to make it depend on the others, but this is convention. And this is universal. And then there is some, let me call it T, some smaller tripling function, which depends on some super conformally covariant quantities, which I call big X, big theta, and big theta bar. So these are ratios of these points. So working in the space of the T is much easier, and I can expand the T into tensor structures. This is sum for A of TA with some, let me call them big lambda A. Okay, and then I can expand this whole thing. I mean, everything is defined in terms of these guys, so I can expand them. It's a finite Taylor series because the datas are anti-commuting, and I can expand this into tripling functions, you know, of this form. So these, and then maybe I can have, I don't know, this one, and so on. These are also related by having some tensor structure. These are some lambda A tensor structures, TA. And these are some lambda prime, let's say A, are tensor structures prime, and so on. So this is a very lengthy process. Probably there is a way to improve this. And what I did was defining some differential operators in superspace, some D, let me call it D Q to the L, Q bar to the L bar, which when they are applied on some superconformal primary, and they are evaluated at zero, so the theta variables being zero, and the result is exactly Q to the L, Q bar to the L bar O. This is not entirely trivial because sometimes if L and L bar are non-zero, there might be some descendants. So this might, there might be some mixing with some derivatives, for instance. But these operators are defined in such a way that these guys do not appear. And then the trick would be to work out some formulas where you can apply this D on the prefactor. So I have this thing here. I can write it. I mean, I have to prove that there is a way in which I can write it as some other prefactor, and then some other D that acts only in the space of X, theta, and theta bar, and acts on the T only. If I prove that, then this expansion can be done directly in the space of T's. And so it could be much quicker to do. So I still haven't done it, but I think probably this is a promising direction in order to have both to address more complicated representations in n equals to 1, but also maybe to address n equals to 2. OK, so I can discuss some future directions and then conclude. Okay, so of course, the one I was talking about earlier, doing n equals to 2, is a possible future direction. In principle, this should be done both to conclusively address this question. Maybe it is true, maybe it is not true that these operators can be constrained, but also to find bounds on other representations. It could be interesting per se. Another direction instead that I would really like to do, Well, one other would be also obvious to do is address different dimensions. It is not super easy to do because there is no speed representation. I mean, the speed representation which are universal for dimensions are the symmetric traceless. But as I told you before, here the symmetric traceless are not constrained by the ANET in a way that is improving on the unitarity bound. So we'll probably have to look into more exotic representations, even higher D, like 5D or 6D. So one needs to develop some tools in order to do this efficiently. And in principle, it should be doable. I think it's interesting to learn what the bounds should be. Another thing is to push the n equals 0 case for bigger j bar. So as I was saying before, here I have these matrices EA, AB. These matrices are not that bad because they actually factorize into blocks. And the size of these blocks are J bar times J bar. Sorry. J bar plus one times J bar plus one. So the problem becomes harder and harder if we increase J bar. But this is interesting to do. It's not just a very tedious exercise. Because in a bootstrap, in the spinning bootstrap, we can have operators where these representations actually appear. So if we have, for instance, four currents, then there are operators of jj, that's OK. But there are also j plus 2, and j plus 4. So the higher, well, maybe I should have said it in the other way, j plus 2, j plus 4. So the higher we go in j bar, the more operators we can constrain. So these are all bounds that we can input numerically to our bootstrap solvers. And they might have implications. They might be strong enough to single out islands or other sorts of things. So this is important to work out in order to have a fully constrained numerical problem. OK, so I can conclude here. Thank you very much. So for holography, I don't have a lot of insight. So as I was saying before, in holographic theories, ANEC is the same as bulk causality. But yeah, what we were discussing before is that I was thinking maybe, I don't know if there is anything interesting into this, but the ANEC integral can be seen as some three-point function of the operator associated to phi, and then graviton in the bulk. So I don't know, maybe imposing positivity on this might have implications for this, but I never thought about this, to be honest. I'm not sure if there's any. For sure, I mean, the bounds that you expect to get in the bulk are bounds related to causality. So you should probably, as one was saying before, probably be just better to directly impose causality in the bulk if you want to derive constraints without having to go through the ANIC and the CFT and everything.
More questions, Sandra? Well, let's thank Sandra again.